With the Paris attack still fresh in our minds and a fresh tragedy in Colorado Springs to think about, consider this. If violence isn't condemned, then it is condoned. Period. More than that, if violence isn't explicitly ruled out within a religious doctrine by the faithful, by people whose background is secular, and by people of other religions, if it is not condemned as some external threat from outside the human community, something so foreign that there can be no coherent message from it, unless we see it as something like a giant meteor headed for our planet from outside the solar system that we all mobilize without hesitation to destroy, unless that is our response to violence, then its message on some level will be received. And here's the message, and you hear it from liberals all the time. In a world where opportunities seem limited and young people feel that there is no future, people like 26-year-old Hasna Eitbulacan, the cousin of Paris terrorist organizer Abdelhamid Abaoud, described as a conflicted, complicated young woman, a former wild child, a young woman who was known for smoking and drinking and partying at nightclubs before she joined Abaoud's shooters and suicide bombers. Such people will find themselves lured by extremists into violence, and that's just the way the world is right now. Make room for ISIS. Majid Nawaz was himself lured into such a group at age 16. After his arrest and imprisonment in Egypt in 2001, he became a leading voice against radicalism. He's author of the book Radical, about his life and conversion. He says there can be no accommodation with violence on any level.
It's incredibly dire if we look at the state of affairs today. If you're satisfied by me telling you that you don't deserve death or that you don't deserve for me to kill you, look how low the bar has sunk. I mean, that should be the default of any basic conversation in civilized society. So I'd say we should push it further than that and discuss the ideas beyond the violence that justify or create the mood music to which suicide bombers dance. And in this instance, when we're talking about Islamist terrorism, I'd say it's the Islamist ideology, the notion that any version of Islam must be imposed upon society. It's that idea that we need to start challenging. It's not good enough that I merely say you don't deserve to die. That's really, it's a really, really low bar.
So the liberal doctrine and discourse of, Western, tolerance and pluralism basically allows for the possibility that some people in some religions will believe a certain level of zealotry and that we tolerate that out of not really discussing it.
Yeah, but this is muddying the waters. I mean, we tolerate racism, we tolerate homophobia, but that doesn't mean we agree with it, and it doesn't mean we remain silent when we hear it. The way in which we tolerate it is legally, meaning that Constitution provides the right to free speech for somebody to be a bigot, but liberals don't tolerate such bigotry. In fact, when they hear the bigotry, even though they recognize the person has a legal right to be a bigot, they challenge them, they debate them, they tell them that they're wrong. So why, if we can do that with racism and if we can do that with homophobia, why can we not do it with people in an organized fashion who are proselytizing within Muslim communities to resurrect a medieval notion of theocracy? I don't think there is any question here about the what I call the legal right to tolerate things and the civil society duty to condemn bigotry. Those two things are perfectly compatible, and we do it all the time. We've done it with homophobia. We've done it with racism.
Although in a world that has war in all the corners of the world right now, how do you say that war and violence are not part of the normal, that there's something outrageous about taking a gun and making something happen that you want to have happen?
Well, no, this is the new normal. I've often said, welcome to the new normal. We're facing a global jihadist insurgency, and I think it's been misdiagnosed so many times. We're not faced with World War III, yet, and I hope we never have to face World War III. And what we're truly facing is, for decades upon decades in Muslim communities, the Islamist theocratic idea, as distinct from the religion of Islam. Islamism is the desire to impose any version of Islam over society, and that Islamist theocratic idea has been spreading unchecked within Muslim communities for decades, and activists on the ground have been proselytizing and preaching for this idea. And so it's got to a stage now where no wonder up to 6,000 European born and raised Muslims have gone to join ISIS, the worst terrorist group we've ever known. ISIS didn't radicalize those 6,000. ISIS plucked the low-hanging fruit. Those 6,000 were already radicalized, they were primed, and they were waiting for the declaration of a so-called caliphate, and along came ISIS and said, we've declared one. So this is the new normal. People have been prepared for this for decades within Muslim communities. And unfortunately, unless we recognize that and recognize what we're facing is an ideological insurgency, everything we do to try and address it is going to be wrong.
Do you think there's a case to be made for hate crimes among people who speak out on radical Islam in the United States, that there is a legal basis for confronting them on questions of hate crimes and intolerance and calling for theocracy?
Well, that if they incite violence, yes. But what I'm talking about is challenging those who don't incite violence yet still advocate theocratic governance. It's the same as challenging people who advocate racism but don't advocate racist violence. Civil society has done this all before, but the difference has been, unfortunately, that up until now, civil society responses have been used to dealing with white racists and, on the large, Christian white homophobes. What it's not used to doing, especially within liberal society, is dealing with racism and bigotry and in this instance, theocracy, that comes from minority communities. And I'd say, actually, if we just reframe the debate slightly, liberals who are always concerned about the welfare of minority communities can square the circle, and they can reconcile their concern for the welfare of minority communities with a duty to challenge Islamist theocracy that is growing within minority community contexts.
Well, it certainly sounds righteous, as you state it, these arguments. But I'm wondering if the liberal record in controlling racism and homophobia in the United States is as good as you claim it to be. We certainly haven't stopped hate crimes and violence using guns in the United States with just a form of candid liberalism.
No, it's not. There's a lot more to do. But what I'm the analogy I'm drawing is simply that nobody within let's call it, without meaning to sound condescending, no one within polite liberal society thinks racism is a good thing. Nor do they think homophobia anymore is a good thing. So the debate has moved forward from when I, growing up, used to be chased down the street by neo-Nazis with hammers and machetes and had to watch many of my friends stab before my eyes and the police do absolutely nothing about it. You know, if you'd said to me back then you'd have an African-American president, I would have laughed you out of the room. So the debate, though there's a lot more to do, has progressed. And the key point here is nobody shirks the fact that it's a duty to challenge that form of racism, even when it's nonviolent. And so likewise, at the moment with this Islamist ideology, we can't even accept it exists, let alone that it's our duty to challenge it. I think to make it very clear, what I'm not saying is that Muslims are somehow have an extra or additional responsibility to do this work, or that somehow they must apologize for extremism within their ranks. No, what I am saying is just as minority communities accept and expect solidarity from mainstream society in challenging racism, likewise, we should show mainstream society solidarity in challenging Islamist theocracy as well. So, in fact, all of us should stand together. It's all of our duty to challenge all forms of bigotry in civil society. And that goes for racism, homophobia, and it goes for Islamist extremism.
Majid Nawaz is a former Islamic extremist. He's now the founding chairman of Quilliam, an anti-extremist think tank, and author of the book Radical. Majid, thanks so much.
Delighted. Thank you very much.